Once upon a time, two men decided if they were making the cut. And then they made the cut. And now JT and Aaron are talking everything from wrestling to pop culture and beyond. Because it's no holds barred.
Will you back down, turn and run? Or stand up with the best?
It's no holds barred.
What's going on, jockass?
Not much, ass jock.
Oh, shit. See, that doesn't hurt as much as I think jockass.
Maybe.
Because an ass jock feels like a piece of protective equipment.
Or it could be like an ass jockey, like you're riding ass.
Is a penis protector called a jock strap there?
Yes.
Okay, because there's another word for it, athletic support or some shit like that.
Yeah, that's like the professional terms.
That's when you wear it at work.
It's more the jock strap is more like the belt, and then like the cup is like the actual hard thing that goes in it.
Right, but would you even, why, it's strange that needs two words.
Right.
Because you wouldn't wear just a belt.
Yes, like a penis apparatus would be fine.
Yes. Yes. If it was just called the penis apparatus, I'd be much more comfortable with all of it.
So I bought my son one for Little League because I didn't know. And then he's like struggling with it. And finally I asked the coach, this was like in the spring because he hadn't played before. And he's like, no, you don't need that shit for a while. I was like, oh, okay. That's good to know because he was not having it.
Well, until he gets blasted in the nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then
no one's blasting line drives at his age, thankfully, yet. So.
See, I think all my boys started hockey at 3. And right. Like, it's like, put that thing on right away because you're going to get a stick.
Yeah. For sure. I think there you definitely need it. But it was funny because it was kind of too big for him. Like, I couldn't find one that was, you know, suitable. So it worked out. It made sense to me that, okay, well, he's not supposed to really have it right now.
Trust me, as someone with a really small penis, you got to find it. They exist. Okay. They really exist.
Okay. Okay. Speaking of small penises, No Holds Barred is here. We're back at it.
Small penis brigade.
Episode 67. And we are finally embarking on this new journey that we teased it a few months ago, but we've been planning it for a while. It seemed like forever ago. And it's our new project's going to carry us for a while here. And that is to review every – well, not review. I don't want to say review. We're going to rank and discuss every WWFE world title change in company history.
Yes.
We have our list here of how many, and I believe there are 141 now because we got to add in the most recent Big E defeating Bobby Lashley.
That's right.
On Raw. So we'll bang that out at some point in the next 3 years. So we're going to go through all these. We're going to do them in batches. Like, so tonight, you'll see in a minute kind of what the first batch is. We're going to try and tier them off a little bit. Some batches are going to be small. You know, some may only be a couple matches because there's a lot to talk about. Some may be more. And we're going to do similar like we do on Now Entering the Rumble. Where we're going to rate them in different categories and then tabulate a total score out of 100. 100, right? We ended up doing?
Yes, 100. Okay. Nice round number so everyone can follow.
Yeah. Do you want to give the categories?
So we are looking at these in terms of match quality, which I think is pretty self-evident. Significance. So I think that's kind of like what it all – I don't need to explain significance. I don't know why I'm trying. You all understand.
The importance of it. Yes.
You all understand what it means.
But that's like historical significance, right? Like – what did it mean long term to the company? Was it important title reign? Yeah.
Yeah. Then we have the moment, which is everything to do with the actual title change. So, was the pop big? Was it did it feel like an important moment? Stuff like that. We got the build, which is the build up to the match. And then finally, the aftermath, which includes things like what was the title reign like? Was it successful? Was it not? Did it give us good stories after? And so on and so forth.
And a couple of things on this, like, because I'm curious how you factored in, like, for aftermath, are you focusing, like, is it everything? Are you focusing more on the booking of it? Because I feel like, you know, a guy can have great matches, but the booking takes in a different direction. Or are you just kind of looking at the whole thing? Like, oh, he had a great run, a lot of matches. Like, I'm thinking like a guy like Punk, you know what I mean? Like those first ones. And I don't think he's, you know, I think there's a world title anyway, so it's not going to be on here. But say like Punk 08. right? It's like he's having really good matches and stuff, but the booking, or even you could even say like Benoit, right? That's like 1-04, right? Like he's shoved down into the mid card, but he's having great stuff. Like, are you factoring the whole thing? Or when you look at Aftermath, are you considering just like how was he booked as a world champion?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think it has to be a combination of both. And also, someone might have like a string of shitty matches, but it might be the most important title change of all time and change the whole business, right? So that's got to factor into Aftermath also.
Yep. And for the moment, like you said, it's kind of crowd reaction. And I'm going to kind of play like finish obviously going to match quality, but a little bit into here too. Like the moment itself that he won, what was that like? Like, was it a big, was it anticlimactic? Was it like, I'm thinking WrestleMania 20, right? Like that finish was a moment in itself, and that's going to add to it, right? So
right.
I think I'm going to factor that in there as well.
Yeah, I think like, I don't want to go back to WrestleMania 20 constantly, because it seems to be.
It's a good use case.
But like, yeah, not only is the finish of the match with the, like say, Triple H tapping add to the moment, but then you got that reunion with Eddie and Benoit, right? So that would factor in too, kind of thing.
Oh, right, in the crowd. I mean, yes, all of it. And then the aftermath, not so good, but we'll get there. So the every match, I believe, on this list, except for one, we're going to have access to in some level. Actually, there may be one other one coming up kind of soon. I don't know if there's footage for. The only one we didn't have footage on was, we couldn't find, was Pedro Morales versus Stan Stasiak. And I was okay with that.
We're grateful. We're grateful.
We had to miss one. But there are a couple other ones that are just clipped early on here, too, which we're going to talk about in 1 second. But there's one in, is Savage Flared? Is there footage of that?
Yeah, I
found it. Oh, yeah, because that was on primetime, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I think everything else has footage, I believe.
Yeah, and we'll be able to watch every single one and take a look at it as we go forward. And the thing with these early ones, too, like, I mean, like, these are probably the ones where we'll struggle a little bit with things like build and whatnot.
Right. And just match quality, because, again, it's clipped. It's kind of all over the place for a couple of them, so it's a little tough.
We're guessing a little bit.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some inference going in on these. So our first batch, we are going to cover 8 matches. So do you want to get started on the first one?
Yeah, sure. And this batch, like to give you an idea of where we're going with it, we're stopping right before Hulkamania today.
Yeah, we felt like that was a pretty clean spot to end. So the last match we're going to cover is Backlund versus Sheik, which feels like the end of that initial world title era, which spans 20 years. So
it's 20 years. That's what's crazy, big, right?
And there's only 7 or what, 7 changes we said in that 20 years. So
there is 8. Oh,
8. Yeah, 8 in 20 years, which is nuts. Because I think it's years later, but it's 8 in a year.
There's like 8 in the first 4 months of 1999.
So we'll get through. That, and then we'll kick off kind of more into the modern era with Hogan. But even then, we're gonna slow down a bit. We're not gonna do this big a chunk really, for a bit. So like we'll be doing smaller bites as we get into the bigger matches that we know more about.
Yeah, exactly. Like our knowledge of these matches, as much as we can watch them, is always going to be somewhat limited, because I think both of us are really, we both started. You started watching like late 80s, early 90s. I started late 80s too. So, you know, we're about to go into the stuff we lived and and watched and rewatched and rewatched. So, yeah. Let's.
I can already promise you, I'm not watching that 92 Rumble again, as much as I love it.
it's good considering how many times I have to watch it for now entering the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, between that and we just did it on Place to Be, so it's I've seen that one. I'm good. I got it.
Yeah. I had already seen it 100 times too.
All right, let's start with Booty Rogers taking on Bruno Sammartino, May 17th, 1963. I believe that was at Madison Square Garden, correct?
I think so too.
A house show. So this is on YouTube, but it's very, very clipped.
All I heard was the audio with some still photos.
Yeah, it's not much going on. But again, I don't think it was much of a match. Anyway, in of itself, right? Doesn't he pretty much just squash him?
Well, it was 50 seconds, right? It was 50 seconds of a match. They talked about how it was a squash. And I think is it Johnny V providing the commentary on the YouTube clip?
It may be. I think it was some like random video that they did. I don't know. Yeah, there's not much going on.
Because right off the gate, he says it's the greatest match of all time ever. So really, I mean, that's
an immediate double down. You don't usually get an immediate double down like that.
No,
but
no. And when you're watching it too, I can't tell if the I think I'm pretty sure the audio is not live. It's just very generic.
Oh, cheering. Definitely. Yeah, the whole thing. They just took these stills, and it must have been on some either Coliseum video or some other. It might even not even been Dota, some third party. Who the fuck knows? But it was clearly not anything from in that moment. This is all we could find was just these stills. Actually, it looks like it's looking at the top right. Does that say the Garden? Or I thought it said ESPN Classic for a minute.
I think it says the Garden.
Okay, so maybe this was like a thing that aired on like MSG or something quick. But Vince does give the intro.
Yes. Yes. You know what music would have worked really well for this whole package? Would have been the TNA music.
Yes. Yes.
Da-na-na-na.
Pretty much. That one pretty much. All right, so not much here. Again, we get a few stills. This may be our biggest divergence in score. So I just went with a 1 on match quality, and you seem to be a lot higher.
Well, here's why I went with a 5, and this is something we should probably bring up. Because we've built a little scale of match quality, right? Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, so basically to take you through it, we 10 is greatest of all time, 0 is like worst of all time.
Right.
And what we came up with for 5 was it's just there. Right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I think a squash is.
That's like our fundamental. That's always been our fundamental grading difference. Right? Like,
yeah.
To me, a squash getting a 1 on my scale is good. Like, because it's not a dud. And most people would just call it like a dud, right? But to you, like 2.5 has always been like, good, right? Or just like exists, right? For yours.
Yeah, that's our 5. Our 5, like according to our list, is just exists.
Right.
And then 4 is exists trending down. 3 is flawed. 2 is bad. 1 is terrible. And 0 is the 1996 Survivor Series tag. SummerSlam tag.
Worst match of all time. As you heard on Wrestling Warzone every other Thursday. Yeah. All right, I'm going to bump this to a 3 based on our discussion right there.
Okay. Just for me, like it's like a squash is closer to say a Chris Benoit MVP match than it is Undertaker fighting Big Show in the Punjabi prison.
Sure, but it's also a big world title match, Madison Square Garden. Like I feel like maybe could be a little bit more to it than 50 seconds. Now again, I think Buddy Rogers was like barely walking at the point or whatever. Like he was like all fucked up. I think that's why they did this. So. All right, either way, so that's an 8 for match quality combined. Significance, I went with an 8. I mean, it's obviously extremely important. Yeah. This is the beginning of this lineage of the world title where the company splits off their belt from the NWA and becomes the WWWF world champion, as Bob Backlund would say, for many years later. Yeah. Bruno is the guy they strap up. So Rogers had been hospitalized 3 times in April of 63, and they basically were like, okay, we're going to get the belt off this guy.
Supposed to die of a heart attack.
San Martino was only 28, so he is like right in his wheelhouse.
But looked 40.
Well, yes, he's looks 40 forever. So
yeah.
Yeah, so that's it. So this kicks it off. This is the Buddy Rogers was technically the first WWF world champion, but when they split off the NWA, but this really kind of kicks off the run of WWF championships.
Yeah. Yeah. Super, super, super important. I agree. I can't really add anything to that. I went an 8 also for significance. So that gives us 16 there. As for the moment, it feels like it was probably just like a Diesel beating Backlund moment.
Yeah, probably almost like kind of a surprise. Like I don't think Bruno had a ton of hype yet. Like he had been around for about 4 years working around different areas. So I don't think he was like a superstar yet. I could be off on that, but I don't think so. He definitely was up there. Like he had fought Luthez a couple times and shit like that. So I think he was on the rise, but this wasn't like, fucking Goldberg, Red Hot coming in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I mean, the quick audio we heard sounded like a big deal, and obviously, you have to factor in a little bit what it means overall. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure it was at the time, it was probably like very cathartic to see the working class guy beat up the effeminate, like, strutting around champion, right?
With a weak heart.
Yes, definitely. If they sold that, you definitely want to see that guy die. So I went 5 for the moment. I'm sure, like, I because we all have such limited footage, I'm kind of giving it a bit of the benefit of the doubt, but it probably felt like it was a fun thing to see live.
All right, build, I gave it a 0. I don't think there was obviously no build. Buddy Rogers wasn't even healthy. They rushed it. They had to sign a waiver and pay, like, just whatever to make sure he was going to be okay. So they moved it quickly to make sure not to risk his health and all this other stuff. So obviously there was like 0 build here.
Yeah, like it's like get the belt on Bruno before the other guy dies.
Right. So nothing there. Yeah. And then aftermath. It's a big one. So obviously Bruno has a monster title reign. He holds it for the next almost 8 years, becomes the man, a massive draw, massive superstar, especially in the Northeast, where a lot of the Italian Americans in New York and in that area identify very closely with him.
Yeah.
Becomes the face of the WWF, the face of wrestling. So, I mean, it's hard, you know, tons of sellouts, like everything, right? I mean, it just dominates during this run as a megastar. So I went with an 8, and I only went with an 8 just, I guess maybe just because a little bit, like I want to hold back to see. But it's high. There's a lot there, obviously.
Yeah, I'm with you. I went a 9 because, like, I thought about holding back. But, you know, here's the thing. I held back a lot on Royal Rumble, and now I'm kind of jammed with my scores.
Yeah.
Like,
regretting it.
Well, whatever. It is what it is. But with this one, I thought, like, number one, this is a reign that will almost certainly never be replicated in terms of duration, right? And number two, it probably really is the foundation upon which the WWE today is built. Like without Bruno and the size of star that he became in the area, who knows if the promotion would have flourished? Who knows if Vince would have been in a position to buy everything later on? So I think it's just that important, which is why I went to a 9.
Yeah, I think you're more right than me in this one. So, but I'm gonna stick. So total grade there is 51. So even with those high marks, you still get dinged a little bit in some spots. It's about half as perfect as any title change could be to give you some sort of metric to look at.
Yeah. And it's really the build that hurts it here, but still a good start for us.
Great.
Yeah. So 51. So the next world title change is Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino, January 18th, 1971 at a house show. And I believe this is also MSG, right?
It is. Yep.
Yeah. So this is like a pretty infamous match where the crowd goes silent.
Yeah, there was not a lot here. I mean, there was some buzz and energy. And then at the finish, yes, they're like, whoa, for sure. But I thought the match itself definitely had some good energy behind it. And the crowd was buzzing into the finish.
8 years to be champion. A long time. Ivan Koloff always strikes me as one of these guys who's way more agile than I ever would have given him credit for.
Well, I think it's because, like, when we really saw him in those later years, maybe in like Crockett or whatever, like he was just kind of old. But even then, actually, he moved pretty well. He just looked old and broken, but he's not. No, he does fly around. Yeah.
He kind of looks like a gorilla here, I find.
It's the hair on his back, yeah.
Yeah, and the arms, the way he holds his arms like the old LJN King Kong Bundy figure.
He holds it like a Russian bear.
There's a lot of arm stretching in this match.
Mm.
One guy stretches one guy's arms and they switch it around.
Those are high spots.
Yeah, that's like a good solid 2 minutes of acting, action, right?
Yeah.
And I know what the video quality is not great in the footage we saw, but the referee looks like he belongs like it, being a camp counselor. Like all he needs is like that ranger hat, and it's like the perfect outfit for him.
Yeah, that's a good comp.
Pieces. The ref does not care at all about Bruno's closed fists.
No, he's just letting him unload. I mean, look.
Yeah.
You're going to stop him from being up the Russian guy? I'm not.
He hates the Russian, right? And like, there was a ref bump, but it's such a funny ref bump because it lasted like 5 seconds. Like, I saw the ref get hit, and I'm like, oh, this must be the finish. But then he was up before I could even, like, finish that thought. I'm like, wow.
Quickly recovers.
These refs were made of sterner stuff back in 1971.
a lot more solid.
Yeah, and then Koloff jumps off the top, flying knee, and gets the pin.
That was the most surprising part of all this to me, is that he just beat him clean, like, no bullshit. Like, this is Bruno in MSG, 8 years in his reign, and Koloff just beats him clean. Like, it wasn't even like Bruno's neck got messed up and he hit him with the knee. Like, he literally just hit his finisher, which I assume was his finishing move, and just that was it. That was insane to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and everything I've ever heard about it is the place just went quiet, which I think is really cool.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Oh. Oh, fuck. This is it. This is how it ends.
This 8-year reign ends at the hands of this Russian bear.
Right.
I thought the match was okay. Like, yeah, for me, it was like, eh, and then getting a bit long in the tooth with all the arm stretches. So I went a 4 on match quality.
No, same for me. You know, I do think they had some good energy in there, like, especially early, but it definitely lulled down. And then into the finish. Yeah, not the best Bruno stuff I've seen.
No. And not nearly enough of Bruno's, like, fire.
Right, right.
Like, when you see him get all fired up and start punching, like, there's a bit of that, but nowhere near, like...
Like, I wonder, did he know, like, was he just kind of pissed? You know what I mean? Like
the boo-boo face?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, or, I mean, maybe not, but it felt a little bit like it.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I mean, Jesus Christ, they gave you 8 years.
Right. One more you want.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, he's probably cabal, you know, only 8 years. Imagine him and Mick Foley having a conversation.
Right. I got 8 days.
I went 6 for significance. It feels like the end of a major, the end of that title reign, a huge change, a shift away from Bruno, which I guess at the time was probably a bit risky.
I would say so, yeah. I mean, this is the guy that's been your standard bearer for so long. You have a bit of an unproven. I mean, I think I'm not going to shortchange Koloff. Like, you know, he wasn't just like a nobody. Like, we'll see in a few minutes. He had been wrestling since 1961. So, I mean, you know, he had been around and had been known. So he had debuted in 69 with Captain Lou. So, like, he'd been around even WWF for a couple of years. So, but that said, yes, it's still a risk to pull the belt off of him.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And then, you know, also a bit of a risk to put it on a Russian with all the Cold War stuff.
Yes.
I wonder if the reaction was similar at all to when they put the title on Slaughter. I mean, I guess people viewed this as a bit more legitimate back then.
I was going to say, this is a little more like real.
Yeah. Where as opposed to, like, Vince put the title on a traitor, it's more like, oh my God, the Russian won. I guess that's probably, yeah.
That's always been, that's been an issue for a while now, wrestling. You get mad at the bookers, not the wrestlers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're mad that, like, the Russian beat the, why don't we have stronger Americans to take on these Russians?
Yeah. And yeah, I honestly do think that's one of the biggest issues with pro wrestling these days. That hurts it when, now look, when the product's red hot and the stories are hot, it kind of doesn't matter, but. Yeah. At times in, like, the early 2000s when the WWF or WWE had all those adversarial moments with its fans and everything, I do think, like, that is when, you know, that vibe comes in to really pile on and hurt things. Like, instead of being upset that Triple H was screwing Daniel Bryan, we're mad that they booked Triple H to screw Daniel Bryan, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas I think it's with Slaughter was maybe in the middle at that point. I don't think it was full on. Like, maybe if you're really in the know, but as kids, you're still mad that Slaughter won.
Right. Yeah. It's just funny, like, that you said in the early 2000s with the adversarial. Imagine a company having adversarial things with their fans for 2 decades.
Right. Right.
And still being alive. The moment of this match, I went 4. I'm really just basing it on the silence and the shock of him winning and stuff like that.
Yeah, I went with a 3. I mean, same, pretty much.
And for build, like, it's just, I don't think there was probably any build, but I went a little bit higher because I figured it's just based off the Cold War. Like, at least there's some meat on that bone, probably.
Well, and I think you have the build of 8 years of Bruno. That in itself is a build. I'm sure that was kind of a story, right? Like, who will be the guy to take him down? When will he get taken down, right? So
yeah,
I think that's probably a part of it too. So I went with a 1, but because I don't think the match itself had any build, but at least as build to when will this reign come to an end?
Yeah, I went with the two, but so we're not far off. And aftermath, I mean,
nothing.
I mean, what, he held the belt a month. I went to one.
Yeah, same. So that gives us a total of 32. So probably going to be one of the bottom ones, but we'll see.
Well, we'll see. Tell us about the next one.
All right, we have Ivan Koloff defending his newly won championship on February 8th, 1971, so just weeks after, not even a month, I mean, just under 3 weeks, yeah, in Madison Square Garden against Pedro Morales. And again, house show match here. And I thought this wasn't too bad. Pedro uses a pretty good power attack. He's got a lot of punches, really emphasized the slams, a lot of big slams. Koloff, I thought, immediately feels overmatched in this. Like,
oh yes,
he's like desperate in the match. Like, as world champion, he is completely desperate. He misses, and then he misses the top rope knee, which I thought was awesome. Like, he really came flying off, and that was a nice playoff of the Bruno match.
Yeah, he was in so much trouble that he tried a handshake 6 minutes into the match.
Yeah, he was like, he was just fucking desperate. He had no chance.
Yeah. And like throughout the entire match, again, I think the audio on this is dubbed in. This is the first one we had the full match for, yep, but I think the audio is dubbed in, but you could see people jumping up and down in their seats the whole match.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. And my favorite part early is the announcer before when he announces the match, yelling at us like an old uncle telling us to pay attention. Now people, this is the main attraction.
Now Pedro had definitely been around for a while too. Like, he had debuted in 59, so like, again, he was more well known. I think this felt like a shot for him, right?
59 he debuted.
Yeah,
good lord, like, that's crazy. Like, is this like a career achievement match?
No, well, Pedro? He was like 30. I mean, he was born in 42, so he debuted pretty young.
Yeah, okay, debuted at 17, so he's 40. He's 37 here.
He was born 1942, and this is what, 70?
71. Oh, yeah, so he's 30.
30. Yeah, no, so yeah, ran his prime.
Yeah, there's a very long headlock spot in this match, but like very long. Mm-hmm. And do you think Andre the Giant, when he turned heel, was like, he took one look at Koloff and was like, yeah, I'm going to wear that. That's going to be my heel look, Ivan Koloff.
That's it looks sharp on him. It'll look good on me.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, to me, like, so when I was thinking about this match, to me the match is boring, but the crowd seems to be really into it.
Oh, they pop for the right things and swell into the finish, which the finish was a little shaky because I always hate the rolling the shoulder. But the German suplex into it was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And the pop was good, and we'll get to the post-match in a second, because I think that's a big part of the moment. But yeah, the work was not as good as the crowd, even though the Koloff missed knee to me was the best spot of the match.
Yes, I agree. But it's funny because you say the work was not as good as the crowd, but then if the work is doing that to the crowd.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Are we off with that? You know what I mean? Like, that's that was kind of my thought as I was watching it. Like, okay, I find this boring, but if it's working, like.
Yeah. They might have been excited to see Koloff potentially get beat, and they knew Pedro had a really good shot. Yeah,
and they were into him.
This felt about on par with the last match. I went with a four. I mean, it was pretty much the same.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Significance, I give it a five. You know, it's kicks off another pretty big run. Like, when you were a kid becoming a fan, I feel like the two guys you'd hear about is like the big champions. Almost Pedro was almost on the same like level as Bruno, reverence wise. You know what I mean? When you'd hear about it, like, oh, Bruno Sammartino, Pedro Morales, like they were, even though Bruno's title reigns are much longer and bulkier. But Pedro did, it was significant because of what he did as well for the Puerto Rican market in New York, because like Bruno had really carried a lot of the working class Italian American fans. And like, I think, again, this was a bit of a risk to go different. Like, they could have just went back to Bruno, but they go to Pedro, and it ends up building like a pretty big fan base and drawing a big Puerto Rican crowd for the next couple of years too. So like, I wanted to factor that and the importance of what he meant to that fan base in as well as champion.
Yeah. That's kind of how I feel about it too. I think I just went a bit lower because I thought, because as much as you just, the only reason I went lower, and this is probably why this score is a bit lower, and my aftermath, is that I don't even as a kid, he always felt like the forgotten champion.
Right.
Like I always forgot he was like champion. Like I heard about Sammartino and heard about Backlund.
Well, the thing with Pedro too is I think, I don't know if it diminishes him that he hangs around as long as he does.
Right.
You know, so like he becomes basically like a jobber to the stars. Right? WrestleMania 2, he's in the Battle Royal. Like, so he's, you know, I don't know if that hurt his legend of him either, that he's just kind of around for a while as not. I mean, he's like 87, he's there as like just like a job guy.
Yeah, he also never did commentary like Bruno.
Right, yeah. Like,
well, tell you something, Vince.
Bruno is just held more reverently because of that. Like, he's presented more as like a legend. And when he comes back from matches in like 86, it's because he's in a blood feud with Piper. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, it's not drawn. Pedro losing to, you know, fucking Jimmy Jack Funk. You know what I mean? Like it's a big difference. So I think that does probably hurt a bit too.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, look, I'm at a 4 for senior fans, so it's not like I'm far behind. You're at a 5, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, the moment, like, so at the end, Bruno gets in the ring to celebrate with him.
Yeah. Yeah. He passes the torch. Did you get a little Mega Powers vibe here, though? Like a little bit of Hogan overshadowing Savage?
Yeah. Cause I was like, fuck, if his name was Hulk Hogan, everyone would be angry with him for being in there at the end.
Yeah. I mean, it did have that little bit of a vibe, but I think it was also big for Pedro to have Bruno come out. It's like Bruno's going to overshadow his run or anything. It's just really him passing the torch with the handshake. You know, he beat the guy that beat Bruno, so he was just congratulating him.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. I got an Apollo Creed Rocky III feel from it.
Right, right. And maybe teasing, yeah, like a potential showdown between the two of them.
Yeah, you know, a match that nobody sees, you know, just so that Bruno knows.
Right.
I don't think there was any sort of major build. I went 1 on the build.
Same.
We both went 5 on the moment. I don't think we said that.
Yes. Yep. And I went 5 on the aftermath. I mean, he's got a 2-year run. Again, I think he does a really good job drawing in Puerto Rican fans and keeping the momentum going, at least for a bit. And again, I always saw him, maybe, I don't want to say he was forgotten, but I did see him as a guy that would get mentioned along with the greats like Bruno, Pedro, you'd hear a lot about. So I think his reign ends up being historically, and I'll say super important, but important.
Yeah, I went 4. I mean, similar, because I find him, he's the forgotten champion. Also, he's probably the inspiration for a young Savio Vega to join the business. So I got to ding him for that.
And by the way, Morales and Bruno did have a match in 72. It was the first ever match featured two fan favorite technical wrestlers. The crowd favored Pedro despite Sammartino's large fan base in New York. They went 75 minutes, ending in a draw when the curfew hit.
That sounds like a fucking nightmare.
Right. But it's a big match for him. Like, to me, that's part of the follow up. Like, him and Bruno went to a full, you know, Broadway in MSG. Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Look, I'll bump him up 5 to aftermath for that. So that gives him 39, which puts him ahead of Koloff's win, but still a ways behind Bruno's first win.
Right. All right. We fast forward almost 2 years for Pedro Morales and Stan Stasiak. This was in Philly. On December 1st, 73. Now, this is the only one we could not find any footage of.
So what I found was on the history of WWE. Mm-hmm. This is the information I have. They wrote, it's in Philadelphia. Stan Stasiak pinned WWF world champion Pedro Morales to win the title at 1742. Oof. When all 4 men's shoulders were down following a back suplex from the champion. After the bout, Stasiak was not introduced as the new champion for fear of a riot. Rather, the ring announcer simply said, "Let's hear it for a great champion, Pedro Morales." The title change was announced on the following Saturday on television. Barney Solomon was the referee for the bout. That's all I got here.
Oh, so they did the same fucking finish with the roll up.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
all right. Well, listen, I'm not going to lie. 17 minutes of these guys with the same finish is not great. So I'm going to go with a 2 for match quality.
I'm with you. Let's go 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Significance. It's nowhere near as significant as Koloff beating Bruno.
No. No. I'm fine with a 2 here as well.
Yeah. The moment. I mean, look, if they had the riot, then that would have been a great moment.
I think I'd bump it a little bit just because they were so afraid of the riot and what it meant to Pedro.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was a little shock there. So this seems maybe a little bit similar to, I'll probably go at least equal to Stasiak. I mean, Koloff and Bruno.
So 3?
Yeah.
The build, I'm going to assume, is nothing.
Correct.
Yeah.
The Rose. And Aftermath is, I'd go, I guess, one again, only yeah. because of what the title change. So this is likely to be our worst. We're probably sandbagging the match quality a bit, but whatever.
I think we're probably being generous.
You think so with the two?
17 minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Stan the man? No thanks.
All right. 16 points.
Yeah. So 9 days later, Stan the man defends against Bruno again. They go back to Bruno house show. I think this one is at MSG, right?
Yeah. And this is December 10th, 73.
Yeah. So, yeah, 9 days. They gave Stan 9 days. You think Meat got teased at school? Your dad was champion for 9 days.
Loser.
This footage that we have, it's like a handheld camera, right?
Right, yeah.
And Stan Stasiak, I find like his body looks like he should be working at a carnival.
He just had no, like, he looked so uncomfortable. Like, he's moving awkward. He looks awkward. He doesn't look like he wants that belt on him. Like, he feels awkward with the belt. He's not smooth at all. Everything was very grounded and subdued. Again, the crowd buzz was there, but it was boring.
Yeah. The announcer says he hit him with,
so yeah. Got it.
The announcer goes, he hit him with the heart punch right in the jaw. I don't understand at all that.
This just like existed solely for, like, yeah. just to get the belt to Bruno.
Yeah, it felt like a longer match. We don't even really have the cuts of this footage make it extremely confusing as to mm-hmm. what's happening, and we don't even get the finish.
Right.
In these cuts, we just hear a bell sound and like Bruno's the champion. I found it really hard to get a grasp of what this match was. So I went a 3. Like, I just I'm gonna guess because of Stasiak, it might be worse than a 3. But because we don't have the footage, it's hard to get a grasp. So I'm giving it a bit of the benefit of the doubt.
All right, I'll keep my 1. And we'll average out to a 2, which I think is probably where it should be.
Okay, that's fair. The significance, like, this starts Bruno's 3.5-year reign.
Right.
Which would be, like, a monster reign for anybody else. But for Bruno, it's, like, it's nothing.
Yeah, and you could tell they went back to him getting business, you know, up and running again. I don't think it was super significant. Like, if Bruno never was champion again, probably doesn't hurt things too much, right?
Yeah.
But again, it's still important because it's Bruno getting the belt.
I wonder, did they go back to him because Pedro wasn't drawing?
You know, I tried to look quick about like what, and I'd have to go back and dig through to see like what the, to see what the crowds were like there. I mean, Pedro's run was, 1,027th, longest reign by any Latino, fifth longest overall. I don't know. It doesn't mention anything about crowds. Yeah. I'm sure there's some stuff out there, but. Yeah, I would think a little bit was just antsy to get back to Bruno. Maybe things are dipping a bit.
You don't have the Observer from this week that could tell us?
No, I'd have to try and dig in the archives.
When are the guys from Between the Sheets going to do the 1973 Observers? So I went a 4 on significance.
Okay. So then we got the moment. I just went with a 3. I mean, Bruno won, the crowds, again, we didn't get much here. Stasiak didn't have much heat as a champion. So like, no. I don't know if anyone, I don't think there was like any surprise to it. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh my God, Bruno won again. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
He was obviously going to fucking win.
Of course, Bruno won. I went 4, you know, he sends Stasiak back to the ring toss where he belongs. Like, I don't know. It felt like a writing of the world.
All right. So looking just really quick, like here's Pedro, at MSG, that's US. So world champion, 21,000, 18,000, 21,000 new attendance records sellout in July of 71. 16,000, 22,000 October 71. So let me fast forward a little bit. So I mean, he's still drawing pretty consistently. He's like between 18 and 22,000 constantly.
It's your sellouts, right?
Yeah, he's still at 22,000 in MSG. When he beats, he fought Stasiak like a bunch. Oh, my really? God. April, August 27th, 1973, televised on HBO. Pedro Morales defeated Stan Stasiak via judge's decision at 52 minutes. And that's actually on a Coliseum video if you ever want to check it out. The history of the world championship.
Good.
That drew 22,000 to the Garden. Jesus, so Mary. I don't see any sign that things were. I mean, if you just go by MSG, which was kind of their metric,
right?
Maybe outside of New York, maybe it was dipping. I don't know. You know, because of the fan base in New York was hotter for the Puerto Rican champion, but
right, less yeah. tolerant fans in other cities is what you're
perhaps,
saying.
Perhaps
the racists down in Providence, Rhode Island,
weren't as into it.
Yeah,
I mean it carries for Bruno still too, like. They don't get a drop either there. I don't think it's until the waning days of Backlund that things start to dip.
Right.
All right. So build nothing, aftermath. Nothing.
I put a 6 because we're back into Bruno. It's a long reign. He's their guy. So it just makes sense to have it there.
Right. And we saw the numbers stay up too. So,
yeah.
All right. So I guess this is a 31, which is our second worst, just behind Bruno Koloff.
Yeah. Wow. I wasn't expecting that.
I think it makes sense. I think the Koloff win was more shocking, and the match is a little bit better from what we saw.
Right. And then that forwards almost 4 years, three mm-hmm. and a half, I guess, where Bruno defends against the superstar Billy Graham. Again, MSG. This is on April 30th, 1977.
No, this was Baltimore, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, you're right. It was Baltimore. Yes, because I watched a shoot interview with Billy Graham where he talked about, we did it in Baltimore to give the impression that anything can happen.
Right. Yeah.
When we did the GWWE project a few years ago, I really found myself loving a lot of Billy Graham matches.
Yeah.
I love the character. I love the selling. And this match kind of feels like no different. Yep. Like he right away, when you turn this on, Billy Graham looks like a fucking beast.
Yes.
Next to Bruno. And Arnold Skaaland is dressed like a jacked up Jack the Pumpkin King with that suit. I don't know why they let him wear that suit. And the match we saw too, it's also the first commentary from the actual time and place.
Right.
And did you notice how big the ring was?
It was giant.
Like, who was that made for? Was that made for cars?
I don't know. Was it a boxing ring's bigger?
Maybe to give them like room to dance around.
I don't know.
But
it was massive. Yeah, it was a massive ring.
Yeah. This feels like the whole match for me is I love Billy Graham's selling.
Mm-hmm.
It's so preposterous. And
he shows off his power too. Like, right away. Like he's, you know, laying in on Bruno, who's a big fucking dude. Yeah. You know? So he's going toe to toe with the Brune and really showing off. And I thought this had a good big match feeling kind of baked in. Like, Billy felt like a contender. This felt like a potential title change here. It didn't feel like just a guy.
No.
Even though I feel like it's been retconned that way a little bit, like, as a major upset. But I don't know. Watch it. Maybe just because I know what happens. But watching it, to me, I thought he felt like a contender.
Well, yeah. But compare him to Stasiak and Ivan Koloff. Like, I mean, it sounds like a cliche, but he looks like a superstar. He looks like $1 million, right? Like, and like, you know, even the match itself, like, it feels like when they're wrestling, like, everything is taking a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their test of strength, like, their whole bodies are involved. They're slamming into each other. I don't know. Like, it felt like the clash of two titans as opposed to Ivan Koloff, like, getting beat up and then running around, you know, like he felt on par to Bruno.
Oh, I agree for sure. It wasn't just a guy trying to survive. Yeah. He was bringing it out of him. And they were good at Bruno. What I thought was on display here is how good he was at controlling the crowd. A lot of ebbing and flowing. He'd bring him up, bring him back down. He'd bring him up, you know, just in time out of the limb work when they were starting to fade a bit. There was a great spot where Bruno throws Graham into the post and just crumbles to the floor.
Yeah.
And then the finish was good, too. Bruno's just dominating. The ref kind of gets tangled, and Billy cheats to win, which we haven't really seen yet, right? We mentioned it a couple times. This is the first time we really get, and I think it solidifies Billy Graham as just like this asshole champion who cheated the, you know, Bruno out of the belt. So this was fun. It had good buzz and some nice spots.
Yeah, great blade job, too, mm-hmm. from Billy Graham.
Yes.
And this is the first time, too, we get Bruno's fire.
Right.
Like when he sees the blood on Graham, he like goes crazy. Like it feels like the first Hulk up, right?
Right. Yeah.
In the shoot interview, Billy Graham was like, they told me to put my legs on the top rope so everybody saw. stuff like, which is really cool. So I liked the match. I went a 6 on the match. Like, I thought it was legitimately a good match.
Yeah, I went 5, but I agree. It was good.
To me, this is also really significant, too. Like, this is the first heel to ever have any sort of reign for any sort of extended period of time.
Yes. Yep. It's significant. It's Bruno's end of his run. This is it. He's done as a world champion. A first cheating heel to win the belt and have a significant run. And a guy that was like kind of a heel talker too, you know, getting the belt, not just like a evil heel or like a brute of a heel. He's like a fast talker. I mean, I guess Buddy Rogers was, but at this point that's ancient time. So yes.
Yeah, I mean, the longest heel run until what? Yokozuna? Like,
yeah. Yeah, because Flair's only a few months, so, yep.
Yeah, and then even then, once you get past that, it goes even longer, right? So, yeah, fairly significant there for me. The moment itself I liked because the people were angry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, legit angry. I like the fire. I like the blood. I like the change. I like the announcer screaming. So I went a 5 on the moment. I quite liked it.
Yep, 4. So just one behind you on all these right here.
Yeah. Build, I don't think there was any really, so I went a 1.
Yeah, I don't think so either. He had just returned in April of 77 and beat him. So, like, he had just come back. He went to NWA for a bit and pretty much came back and they gave him the belt. So.
Right. And aftermath, I went a 4 because I thought that this not only – I guess it wasn't as long a reign, but, right. Like, I remember watching a lot of the Dusty Rhodes title defenses. Those felt like a massive deal. And I think, too, because Graham is so influential and this reign really legitimized him, I found.
Yeah, I'm going to bump it up, too. I mean, he was working the U.S. and he did a lot in Japan as well. It's like he was fighting – like, listen to the guys he fought. Like, this is a pretty big list. He fought Bruno, Jack Briscoe, Dusty, Pedro, Don Morocco, Mil Máscaras, Strong Kobayashi, Carlos Roca, Ricky Choshu, Putski. Like, he was fighting some big names. Harley, he had that match in the Orange Bowl with Harley. I'm going to bump up too, I think. I don't think we put enough respect on this run, so I'm going to go 5.
You know, like, what?
I
mean,
in 9 months, he did all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was one of the ones, like, so he's like the opposite of Morales for me. I remember learning, like, hearing about Billy Graham and then hearing, oh, it was only like 9 months his reign.
Right.
Like, it's the opposite of Morales for me. So, yeah.
All right. So that puts him at a total of
41.
So that's our second best right now. That little bump up ahead of Pedro Koloff, which is good.
That's fine.
All right. Bob Backlund versus superstar Billy Graham. This was at MSG on the MSG network on February 20th, 1978. What'd you think of this one?
Well, Arne Skaalen, number one, dressed like a human being, which
well,
I thought
was.
So
he's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm good with that. There's actually not a ton of footage. This one's really cut to pieces too. Yeah. Like there's really not a ton at all. Which is kind of too bad because I like both guys and I feel like both guys could probably have a good match. All we really get is a couple of shuffles around and Backlund winning with the running atomic drop to a massive pop, which was kind of his move, which I came to discover during the GWWE. One thing I really liked, though, was that Backlund hits him with the running atomic drop. Backlund pins him, but the whole time he's pinned, Graham has his foot on the rope. Which I thought is a really nice piece of business considering he won with his feet on the ropes.
Right.
Like,
yeah, it's a nice callback. And you wonder, too, like if they were trying to do that to set up potential rematches. The interesting thing here is that Graham tried to go to McMahon and talk him out of this. And he said, what if Koloff turned on him and he just became a face as champion and let him be the face instead of transitioning? And McMahon said he already made a handshake deal with Backlund to be the new top guy and he wanted him, you know, didn't want to go back his word, but he also had never been a face like Billy Graham on top. Like he's
no.
a confirmed heel, a negative role model. They weren't gonna fuck with him being a face. But it's interesting where his head was. I mean the tagline on him is he was ahead of his time. Even his DVD is called that.
Right.
And I think it's very true.
When in the shoot interview I listened to, he was talking about how when he got the belt, Vince McMahon Sr. told him, we want to give Bruno a rest, so you're going to get the belt.
Right.
And he told him to the day when he was going to drop it to this up-and-comer Bob Backlund, who he was getting ready.
That is insane.
Yeah, like, he's like, to the day. And he was right. And like, so even though he maybe argued, like, he was told from the beginning of his reign, no, February 20th, you're losing to this guy, Bob Backlund, who's not ready yet, but will be ready by then.
That's nuts. That level of forethought and booking to go in there.
I need it back.
Well, in fairness, they also didn't have all the TV and stuff to film to do now. Yeah. But
they didn't have like 8 hours of TV.
Yeah, it was much easier to plot that out. All right, so let's go through this quick here then with the...
Yeah, match quality, again, because it's cut, I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt. I like both guys. I'm going with a 4.
I'm
going
to go up to a 3. I added a 2, but...
Yeah. To me, again, when we're into significance, like, this starts a major, major title reign going forward, which it's like a 6-year reign, right?
It does. And I feel like people are real split on Backlund. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's looked back at and enjoyed by some, but I also think he's despised by a lot. Like, a lot of boring matches, a lot of long matches. Like, it's a long reign. It's kind of bland, especially later in the era. The final months, like, he's got the weird crew cut. He lost his muscle. He's like not as over. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like not as important to me as like Bruno or Pedro or even Billy Graham. Like, I feel like we're starting to lose some momentum with this style of a long white meat baby face, especially back when he had a different charisma. Like, he had some charisma, but not like a Bruno or a Pedro or eventually Hogan, right? He's just much more like the working, not even a working man. He's just an athlete. Like, that was.
Yeah. It's so funny that of the three we just mentioned, he's the one who would be the successful heel later.
Right. Yes.
Because it almost doesn't make sense.
Well, it kind of does in a way. Yeah. He is so bland as a face that it would be like shocking for him to be a heel, you know?
Right. Right. But all that said, I went 6 on significance. I think it's a pretty important moment, and it gets us. I almost feel it's too bad Graham didn't have more of a run.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. So for a moment, I went with a 3. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure the crowd is excited. Yeah, thanks to see Graham lose, like you said.
Yeah, I went with a 4. Right? Again, I think it's just more benefit of the doubt. Build, I went to 2.
Yeah, same. I mean, from what you're saying, it sounds like he was built. I don't know if the match itself was built much, but Backlund was built well.
Yeah, I don't think the match was built well, but that's why I went with it, because like Backlund was built well.
So I will say this, actually. We might want to bump it a little bit. Listen, 4 months in, Backlund got his first title shot. He lost by count out. Received additional title shots. His fortune stars had changed. 2 went to a double count out. Then Backlund beat Graham by count out, and then he finally beat him. So maybe there was a bit more of a build here.
Okay, let's bump it to a. I'm gonna bump it to a 3 then.
Yeah, I think there's at least something going on.
Meat on the bone. And then aftermath, they went 6, pretty much for all the reasons I mentioned earlier. And like, as much as he has boring matches, he has really great matches too. I like to see the series, the Valentine. Like, there's a lot of good on that bone too. Yep. So, you know, and I don't think they would have kept the title on him for 6 years if he was sticking up the joint.
I think it was a little stubborn at times, but yes, I went 6 as well.
Yeah, so that gives him a total of 43, this title change, and that's our second best so far.
Yep.
But we got one more to talk about before we get out of here.
Okay.
From December 26, 1983, Bob Backlund defending against the Iron Sheik.
Night after Christmas. Yeah. Big MSG show, the usual Christmas week show.
Vince Grinch here, the day after Christmas.
And so Sheik had been, again, he had been around
forever,
obviously for a while as Hussein Arab and everything. So I feel like this is a little bit in the vein, I guess, a little bit in the vein of like Koloff, just a journeyman who had been around since, you know, 10 years, 1972, all over the place. He had just come back, though, in 83. So again, this is like a trend where they bring a guy back and put him right into the title picture. So he returned to 83, gets the title shot. They have the infamous attack on All American where they did the Persian Club Challenge and Sheik attacked him, injured his neck, and that set up this match 2 days later. So there is a bit of a story coming in here, which is cool, where Backlund's neck is screwed up from the attack. And I like the start too, where Sheik has the robe on, he goes right at him, he goes after the arm, and I thought Backlund looked a little pudgy here, which is different for him too. Like, he definitely was not as ripped and in shape as he normally is.
He's wearing the singlet, right? Yeah. He's hiding something.
I think singlet, Bob, is where things fall apart.
Crazy heat off the start, though, for Sheik.
Oh, yeah, a lot of buzz. And he is pouring sweat, just pouring sweat, like two minutes in.
And this is a man who comes from a very hot climate.
Yeah, it's probably the coke, I'm guessing. he really grounds Backlund, too. But Backlund's got a lot of fun comebacks. He's got, like, this big headbutt he lays in, a big hard forearm as well. So he's, like, really landing some nice shots.
Yeah, I like it. I love the idea that, like, so it really plays into the storyline that, like, Backlund is hurt. Right. And I love that story of the match. Pat Patterson compares the Sheik's head to the goddamn surface of the moon at one point. But yeah, like, even things like Backlund is trying for a suplex, but, like, falls on his injured neck. Yeah. Like, I love the story of the match. And even one-arm Bob Backlund has great fire.
Yes.
Like, and he does a really great job of selling the idea that he can't do anything that requires both arms.
Yep.
Like, no, and that seems like a small thing, but that's kind of a lost art, I find. Like, I think the last guy I saw do it was, like, Kenny Omega doing a one-armed one-wing angel in Japan, like, 4 years ago. Like,
well, and it's really focused, too. Like, the timing's on point. I love this one spot where Sheik is doing it. I don't know if it's kind of a standing surfboard where he's behind Backlund pulling his arms back, right? And Blassie yells, "Put your knee on his back," and she kind of nods and he does it. Like, that
he
was like
does.
Cool, yeah.
I love that because it felt like he was it gave value to Blassie being there.
Yeah, and Sheik, I love Sheik's nod, like, "Oh yeah, yeah, you're right, let me do that." And he does it.
I would put the knee.
So that was really cool. I love Backlund. He can't even do it with a backslide because his arm is so fucked up.
I love that sequence that he really tries to do it and then
he just can't. And then he does that little roll up, like that backwards victory roll thing that he does. Like, it's almost like a jackknife pin, but he can't keep that locked down either. And then that goes into the finish.
Yeah. And she just slaps on the camel clutch, holds him for not as long as I thought. I was expecting a bit of a longer, and Scullin throws in the towel and the crowd is fucking livid.
Yeah. And it was that towel throw was well earned though, because with all the arm work, the neck injury, like, Bob had been so worn down, it didn't feel forced that Scullin would throw the towel into me. Like, it didn't feel out of the realm of possibility that he cared so much that this guy was so beaten down. Oh, but yeah, the crowd was pissed. I thought it was really good, though. It was a lot of focused work. The payoff was good. It was a shocking change. It means a lot because it's not only taking the belt off Backlund, it's the first world title change in 5 years. Also, it gives Backlund this gripe that he can hold on to forever.
10 years.
That plays a role later. So it's like it ends up being a really unique finish, but also one that pays off decade later.
Yeah. And he sells it so well. Like, by the end of the match, he's dead, dead, dead.
Right.
Like, so I like the match a lot. I went a 6 on the match. And as we're talking through it, I'm tempted to put it up one, but I'm going to leave it there.
Yep.
I just love the selling in the story.
I went 6 as well.
Yeah. Significance. So I struggled a bit with this one because, like, on one hand, we know where this is going, right? Mm-hmm. But the Sheik himself doesn't really represent anything that significant. It's more what's coming. So,
yeah, I gave it a 5 because I factored in the towel and all that, like, just meant and the title change happening after all this time. And it just felt like a sea change coming. Like,
yeah, I'm going to put it to 5, too. Fuck it.
Christmas night, night after Christmas. Like, all of it just kind of felt like a big deal.
Yeah. I went a 5 on the moment.
Yeah.
Like, I love, too, that after he gets the win, she gets on the mic and starts screaming about Iran.
Yes, the crowd just fucking losing it.
Yeah, and they're so pissed off. And I also, as we were talking through the Persian club beating and stuff, I upped the build to a 3.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same. Okay.
Yeah. And aftermath, I went a 5, which is high for a title reign that's only a month long. but we're setting up for something big. So that's
yeah. I went six, same reason. Like this is gonna be a big one. So I feel like it should be shown in the score that because that's part of why he won, right? Was to get to that. So it should be factored in. It's not like he goes 5 years and then they decide to do something else. It's they knew exactly what they were doing and that's why they did it. So
yeah. So that gives him a score of 49, which puts him as our second.
And close to Buddy Bruno, so not far behind.
Yeah, of everything we watched, this was the match I was most looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, it was really good, and it felt like the real bridge between eras for us.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, that was a lot of fun. You know, we hit those eight matches. This is kind of the old time. The ancient times are behind us now. We have one more match that we're going to hit that's right around here, obviously. But then from there, we're on. Like, we're into that stretch that we know and love so well for a while. So we're only going to do two matches next time, Aaron.
Yeah.
Because there's so much to get into.
It's going to be a Hulkamania extravaganza next time.
So we're going to do Hogan Sheik and Hogan Andre. Yeah. And I think that's a perfect way to go about it, because then after that, things go a little bit different. So, all right. Anything you want to just talk about real quick for what's out before we wrap?
Look, everything. We got stuff dropping every single day. High quality stuff all across the board. Please like the subscribe to the network.
Smash that like button.
Smash that like button. Subscribe. But seriously, let us know. We're always looking to improve. And I mean, honestly, with the shows we got going now, I feel like a lot of ways you can't go wrong. I'm not trying to brag, but I'm just really high on all the people we have doing shows here on North South.
Agreed. All right, that'll do it. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. The Dookie has been dropped.
Bye, Jackass.
Fill my heart with song. Let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for.